Hey, Word Balloon listeners, before we start today's show, I wanted to remind you of one of our sponsors, that is Drawer Boxes from the Collection Drawer Company at CollectionDrawer.com. All right, you got your holiday money? I'm sure Nana and Aunt Bessie just gave you envelopes of cash. That's found money. What are you going to do with it? Might want to consider getting Drawer Boxes because they are the strongest storage containers made for comics. They can be stacked up to 6 high to economize floor space. And don't forget, unlike regular long boxes and short boxes, you got to lift off the lid. You got to, you know, grab that second box from the bottom and lift everything to get to the good stuff. No more with Drawer Boxes because they really do act like file drawers. Genius. I can't believe somebody didn't think of this before the Collection Drawer Company. But they came up with it first, and they're the ones taking advantage of it. They come in both long and short versions. They also now have a combination size that fit both magazines and slab comics, too. They can also be linked together with box locks, box anchors in any configuration. You can make your collecting room that much cleaner and neat. Everything will stay secure with no tipping or storage when you use those box locks, box anchors. The drawer boxes can also be fitted with the box sort upright dividers inside the boxes. Those are great for your monthly comics where you're still working on a run. It's still coming out. You can leave a space for newer books, but you can also kind of compact everything you've got tight so you won't get things like, you know, spine damage and cracks in the comics and stuff. Everything will be upright and snug. And by using multiple upright dividers in a drawer, collectors can create even more sections for each title and create open spaces between titles so that you'll have room to add more issues later. So check them out. They are sturdy, they are dependable, and they really are the best thing for your comic collection. I'm talking about Drawer Boxes. They are available at CollectionDrawer.com. Check them out. Order some for yourself today. Drawer Boxes from the Collection Drawer Company. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Word Balloon, the comic book conversation show. John Suntress here. We got a good doubleheader for you today. Very excited to bring back John DiMaggio. Now, if you didn't hear it, John was on the New York Comic Con coverage show. We got to talk with John at the Paley Center. They were honoring the Batman Brave and Bold show, and John was there representing Aquaman, the King of the Sea. But we also talked a little bit about Futurama. And he also teased this new movie that he made called I Know That Voice. It's a movie that's going to be available on iTunes and on streaming through satellite and cable providers January 7th. So I'm going to play that Paley Center interview again with John. But then also we have a brand new conversation with John as well. And he tells us about the ins and outs of voiceovers, why this movie might be a good thing for you to watch if you're interested in the voiceover business. And man, he got great people for this movie as well. Very fun conversation with John DiMaggio to start things off on Word Balloon. Then we're going to wrap up with Heath Corson. Now, you might know Heath from his work with Ben Blacker on the Nerdist Writers Panel Comic Edition. He and Adam Beecham and Ben and Len Wein all get together and talk comics, and sometimes they do interviews. Well, this was my opportunity during the holiday season. Heath is a Chicago guy, so I had him come up to my radio studio, and we had a great conversation. He is the writer on the adaptation of Justice League War. That's going to be the new DC direct-to-video movie coming out in February. We talk a little bit about that, but mostly we just talk about his love of comics, and really his connections to comics have been going on for quite some time. He's very excited to be in the animation business. We talk about that, what comics he likes and dislikes, and a real fun conversation to wrap things up on today's Word Balloon. It's all brought to you by Drawer Boxes from the Collection Drawer Company at CollectionDrawer.com, but also from InStock Trades at InStockTrades.com. Now, as we wind down the year, these are your last opportunities to take advantage of a lot of great end-of-the-year New Year's resolution sales. You can get 45% off DC, Marvel, Image, and Dark Horse books. You can also get 38% off IDW, Valiant, Fantagraphics, Humanoids, and Boom Studios. This ends on New Year's Eve, December 31st, so take advantage of it while it lasts. And in the meantime, check out some other great trades that have come out and are available at great prices from InStockTrades.com. You can get the Superman vs. Mongul trade paperback, 45% off, just $8.24. How often do you get to start a sentence like that? Vampirella Archives hardcover, 30% off, just $34.99. you can get Peter Panzerfaust, the deluxe hardcover edition, 50% off. It's just $20. You can also get The Fantastic Four by John Byrne, the omnibus hardcover volume 2 is 45% off. It's just $68.75. You can get the 19th trade of Fables. Man, it's winding down. I'm very sad. But get it while it's out there, 50% off, just $8.50. You can also earn an extra 2% on your orders if you go to the website and click for details. And it's great. I mean, you've got all this holiday money, a great place to spend it and get great deals, InStockTrades.com. All right, let's start things off with a conversation with John DiMaggio. Now, to lead off, I'm going to replay our quick conversation on the red carpet at the Paley Center in New York. Do you know about the Paley Center? New York and L.A., a lot of times they will honor television shows and do basically the same thing as a convention panel and have the technicians and the actors and the directors all involved to talk about the show. They usually show a couple episodes, and then they do a Q&A with the audience. Now, all that stuff is private, but we did get to be on the red carpet and speak to all the actors that were there. It was DiMaggio and Diedrich Bader, of course, who was the Brave and Bold's Batman. We spoke with James Tucker, the producer, and Andrea Romano, the wonderful voice director, who is really one of my heroes in the animation business. James is, too. But a real fun conversation with John to start things off and then get into his discussion about his movie. So let's start things off with this little quickie with John DiMaggio on Word Balloon. John DiMaggio, great to see you. Not only the wonderful Bender for so long on Futurama, but the King of the Sea, of course, Aquaman. It's a pleasure, sir.
Outrageous! Yes, I'm the King of Atlantis. Yes.
A lot of fun, man.
I was just asking Andrea, the evolution of that voice and that characterization. Tell me about it.
You know, Andrea was so key in you know, because it's funny, like, it was up to me and Diedrich for Batman. He got it.
Wow.
Which is great, because I love Diedrich, and, you know, he's a friend of mine before the show.
Cool.
And then she said, well, you didn't get Batman. I said, oh, that's cool, you know, it's the breaks. She said, but you did get Aquaman. And I was like, yeah, Aquaman, awesome. I'm going to summon whales. This is going to be awesome. And so, you know, just being able to just play. I mean, come in and play. Andrea and James, I mean, everybody on the show was just fantastic. And getting to sing the songs that we did and just do all this stuff. And, you know, I'm getting to play, you know, being Aquaman and Gorilla Grodd, like getting to play both sides of the crime spectrum, you know. It was just a lot of fun to be able to do that on the show.
Well, and I want to ask about another villain that you've played, but first I got to know, for an Easter egg, what would your Batman have sounded like?
You know what?
Oh no.
I think he would have sounded something like this. Yeah. That's pretty much what I would have done.
All right.
He's got that natural sort of thing that happens. It's perfect. His Batman would have been is better than my Batman. That's why he's freaking Batman, for crying out loud.
Yeah, but man, I'll tell you, you had a tough challenge in Under the Red Hood. And I got to tell you, your Joker, and everyone loves Mark Hamill, and it's a signature role, but your Joker was incredibly effective, not only for that movie. I hope you get the chance again, because really, man, that was the sizzle in that movie.
Thank you. I really appreciate that. Two things that are very similar, or in fact, totally similar about Batman, Brave and the Bold, and Under the Red Hood, is that Andrea directed both of them. So I was fortunate enough to have her say, John, I need you for this project. I said, sure, anything for you. And she said, you're going to be the Joker. And I went, Mama's dead. And so I got to play, and, you know, I mean, and the first recording was the opening scene, and you've seen it, and it's brutal.
Amen. Yeah.
And so, I mean, we got off on that, you know, first thing. So just that was pretty impressive, and I loved doing that, and it was a real dramatic turn as far as voiceover is concerned, you know, and that's always a wonderful challenge, and I welcome it all the time. I'm totally game for anything, and that's the beauty of doing what I do, is that, you know, you get to play, you get to really play, and you know, I got to, as evil as my Joker is, there's a sense of play in it, you know. You know, you play out that vein, and And thank you. I appreciate it.
No question, man. Well, that's the thing. And like you say, it really is 180 from Aquaman and certainly Bender and stuff. And while I mentioned Bender, you know, Futurama wrapping up,
yeah.
I'm one of those people, as I'm sure millions of others, that hope that it does find another platform.
Well,
but if not...
What's beautiful is that last episode was an open door still. So in case anybody wants it, you know, that's the story. But, I mean, 154 episodes, not too shabby. You know?
Absolutely.
So, I mean, and I had two people come up to me today and say, congratulations on Futurama. And that's the way I like to think about it. I don't think about, oh, man, it's a bummer about Futurama. It's like, no, dude, we came back to life. We came back from death twice. Like, we were resurrected twice to come back. And it was a joy, you know? And big up to Adult Swim and big up to Comedy Central, you know? I mean, just huge. Huge support from them, and that's, you know, when you have that, hey man, that's all right, you know. And we still have fans, and we have the Simpsons Futurama crossover. We already recorded it. It's really, really, really funny.
Is it scheduled? Is it, you know?
Oh yeah, it's,
oh, okay.
No, we already recorded it, so it's going to be on next season, I think.
Okay, cool.
So, but yeah, I mean, it's great. And so, you know, life goes on. Other things are happening. You know, I got Adventure Time. I got, you know,
yeah,
Ben,
yeah.
10 is still, you know, still doing,
absolutely, man.
Ben 10. Randy Cunningham, ninth grade ninja. I mean, just all sorts of stuff. And I'm just very fortunate, very blessed that I'm in the industry that I'm in, and I'm able to continue to work and you know, just keep going, see what happens.
The talent proves out, man. No, you're consistently great. We always look forward to your next episodes and next feature-length directed video or on the big screen. So,
well, look out for I Know That Voice, because that's the documentary.
Oh, yeah,
that,
yeah. I heard about that in San Diego. Yeah. Did you
absolutely
make that, Jeff?
Oh, yeah. I was the executive producer.
Oh, that's great, John.
That's,
okay.
That's my money.
Hey, man, that's awesome, man. Yeah.
And I have a panel tomorrow night at Comic-Con, and we have a premiere at the Egyptian Theater on November 6th.
Oh, wow.
And we have our PR team working on getting some press there and stuff like that. So, I mean, we're just chugging along. We're going to be on In Demand the first 3 weeks of December. And, yeah, big deal. I'm really excited. So.
Oh, man. Well, maybe I'm going to have to hit you up as soon as I finish this recording, and we'll get some pub for that. Yeah, that'd be great, man. So, but, no, pleasure meeting you, man. Continued success, and nice going.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Okay, and as promised, as soon as the movie was ready to be promoted, the PR people contacted me and said, would you like to talk to anybody for the film? Wanted John back. So John managed on a Friday morning to come on and have this fun conversation. So let's pick up and continue our conversation with John DiMaggio on Word Balloon. John DiMaggio, welcome back to Word Balloon. Man, I just talked to you 2 months ago live at the red carpet at the Paley Center, so it's nice to have you on the phone.
Thank you so much for having me again. Good to hear from you, man.
Hey, congrats on I Know That Voice. That's wonderful. That it looks great from the trailers that I've seen so far. I'm a radio guy, so I'm in the low end of the voiceover business. You're like a headliner, man. I'm like one of those opening acts that, you know, they throw peanuts at before you guys come on.
Well, maybe you're in the minors. I'm in the majors. You're holding records, so don't sweat it.
No, it's all good. This looks fantastic. It's all the people that
Thank
we
you.
Already know, like yourself and Tara Strong and Tom Kenny and Kevin Conroy. But people with the title says it. I Know That Voice. Guys like the Taco Bell guy and a lot of other people that once they hear the voice, they're going to know who we're seeing on screen.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's so many people that people go, oh, that's it. Oh, I get it. Like to connect the face to the voice. I mean, that was one of the big deals about this film was that because that's how it really started. You know, it started with myself and Larry Shapiro, the director, Lawrence to his mother and father. but Larry Shaps and I were in Amsterdam, and he was shooting footage for this thing called Jam in the Dam, and we were there, and I was emceeing, and I was up on stage, and I whipped out the Bender voice, and these four German tourists out of nowhere just freaked out, and we were like, what's going on with this? And so we were hanging out at the bar, like in between sets, and they came up to us, and the one guy was like in broken English, like, you are the voice of the robot, yeah? And I was like, yeah, man, I'm Bender. And they were like, oh, man, we love the show, you know, and we love you and the robot, but it's so funny. And I'm sitting there going, I can't believe this. And Larry is blown away. Larry's just like jaw dropped. Like, and after they walked away, he was like, that's incredible, man. We got to do something. Like, there's got to be some way to document this. Like, that was like, and that's how the idea for the film came about. And that was in 2009. And we got Tommy Reed on board in 2011. And we have over 150 interviews, 160 hours of stuff.
Wow.
Like, I mean, it's just mind blowing. Like, the what's come to fruition now, you know, like January 7th, 2014, iTunes in all English speaking territories, which is just like, it's just huge. It's just huge. That's all I'm going to say. And I'm just so excited about it. I'm freaking out. Like, I'm pretty intimidated by this whole thing. You know, it's my first foray into executive producing. Note to all aspiring filmmakers, don't get high on your own supply, meaning don't pay for the movie. Have somebody else put some money into it.
Understood.
Because I'm the sole survivor. But anyway, you know what I mean?
Like, I do.
But this film is just, you know, people are talking about it, and people are interested about it, and right now it's just weird. Like, you know, the timing of it is perfect. People are really talking about voice acting, like, lately, and then, you know, and so, you know, especially with that Lake Bell film, like, you know, In a World, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's funny, we tried to get into Sundance, and they said that they already had another movie about voiceover, and it was that.
Oh, crazy. Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it was just like, all right, well, we're the real deal. She's just, you know, right, pulling everybody's leg.
It's the difference between the front page and a documentary about the New York Times page one. So, yeah, man,
yeah.
I'm hip, absolutely.
Yeah.
That's crazy. I imagine this is going to be filled with great anecdotes of these guys and sessions. And, you know,
yeah.
What about, I really felt that in the last 15 years or so, a lot of face celebrities have been getting into voiceovers and doing animation and stuff. But by the same token, it's and it concerned me that a lot of you really great voice actors might be getting screwed over, like, lead roles. But as you say in the trailers, it isn't just film and it isn't just cartoons. There's gaming and stuff. But tell me about that, you know, invasion of the celebrities.
Well, you know, listen, if I'm a producer and I'm doing something and I want to bring in the dollars, you know, you got to pay to play.
Sure.
And so, like, you know, when they bring in the celebrities, that's what they're banking on. It's a business decision. It's not an artistic decision. If artistic decisions ruled the day, then, you know, celebrity wouldn't be the thing that it is. You know what I mean?
I do.
So listen. Each his own. There's plenty of work out there to get. You still got to hustle. You still got to, you know, and sometimes those gigs will come your way, those big gigs that will take you over the top. You know, I was fortunate enough to get a show like Futurama, and that opened so many doors for me professionally. And it was, you know, so there's always a shot. There's, you know, never be afraid to bet on the long shot in show business. But just the same, it's like, you know, there's it's a two-sided coin. Sure, there's somebody else that's way talented. I almost said way talented.
It's all good.
Did
man.
You hear that?
I did. I appreciate
it. Almost
that.
Came out.
Nah, you're all good, dude.
Wow. I mean, you know, I had to call myself out on that because people were like, was he about to say? Yes, I was, everybody. Sorry. But there's people that are way more talented than some of these celebrities that do these gigs. But, you know, hey, listen, that's it. And the other thing is that voice acting is a wonderful, wonderful outlet for character actors. And when character actors get these big parts, and they happen to be kind of celebrity character actors, mm-hmm. I'm cool with that. I'm all right with that. If it's not just them doing themselves, you know what I mean?
I do.
But, you know, if somebody's just doing their own voice, it's like, come on, man. Really? And you're getting paid $10 million? Give me a break.
That
upsets me. That there's something wrong there in my head there. But, you know, what are you going to do? It is what it is, and there's work to be had all around. So, you know.
That's awesome, man. And I know that your celebrity of, you know, the things – see, I'm having trouble with words. Your fame that came from Futurama really did lead to other – great gigs. I mean, we talked about it 2 months ago. Your fine work as Aquaman on Brave and Bold, and a completely different gig. Yeah, by all means. Yeah, yeah. Oh, no, I was hoping to hear from the King of Atlantis. I don't know. You're kind of, and I know your voice is roached right now. So listen, if the last thing anybody wants to do, like sometimes in the first thing of the morning, hey, do a silly voice. Would you do a silly voice for us? No, I won't.
Well, if I have to do Aquaman, I'll do Aquaman. Outrageous! Yes. It's almost like Marv Albert right there. And yes, the New York Knickerbockers are outrageous. Patrick Ewing in the paint. Yes. I'm going way back. I just aged myself years.
Now, sadly, I know the reference.
Patrick
it's
Ewing
okay.
in the paint for the Knicks.
But that's the thing, man. Like, Aquaman is 180 from Bender, and then another 180 from both of those is your Joker portrayal in Under the Red Hood.
Right. Yeah, that's the guy that, you know, I often say that Joker is more likely to commit prison rape than all other Jokers. I just think that take on it is just, he's just so brutal, and he's just so vile, and you know, that's the beauty of it. That's the beauty of the job, is that the sense of play, and yet the sense of the creation, like being able to create as an actor. You know, being able to really, really craft, and, you know, that's the joy of it. You know, it's one of those things. I pinch myself sometimes. I'm like, wow, I'm really able to do this. And I'm really able to do a lot of different things. And, you know, I mean, that's an actor's dream, you know, and you paid for it, you know, you know, and it's just a trip. It's just a trip. I'm just having a blast. And this movie is, I'm so excited about it.
I'm really excited to hear from June Foray, who I know. I mean, she's the Babe Ruth of voiceovers, and I mean,
yeah,
it's
no joke.
Isn't it cool that like the torch has been passed from Mel Blanc to June Foray as being like the old, you know, the old guard that is still excellent even in her 90s and still amazing.
You know what's funny about June Foray is that this is a little known fact. They used to call Mel Blanc the male June Foray. So, I have to give credit where credit is due. June Foray is pretty much the original. Like, she is mind-blowing. She was at the premiere. She's 95, man.
Wow.
She's still doing it.
Yeah.
And she shows up at the premiere, and she sat next to the woman that plays Judy Jensen. Okay?
Oh, wow.
They're sitting there. And we're doing the Q&A afterwards, and you know, it's like, you know, the crowd gets up on its feet for her, and she's saying, "What's going on?" "That's for you, June. That's for you." She said, "Oh, stop it!" Like, this is what happened. Like, it's incredible. Like, she is something else, and she's the fact that she's still going is mind blowing. We talk about her a lot in the film, and how, you know, just everybody in our industry has so much respect for her. You know, just the fact that she's still doing it, you know, is incredible.
That's awesome. So as a kid, I mean, I guess, and I'm betting this is the case, did you listen to, like, comedy albums and old-time radio to kind of...
Oh, yeah.
You know, I kind of figured, man. Go ahead.
I listened to... my favorite comedy record, I have two. Class Clown... George Carlin
sure.
is the best. And then there's also Steve Martin, Wild and Crazy Guy. That's incredible. And all the Richard Pryor, Live on the Sunset Strip. But with the Richard Pryor when he's in Long Beach is the best one.
Yep.
But I also loved Robin Williams. My mother let me stay up to watch Saturday Night Live when I was a kid, so I was watching the original primetime players.
Attaboy.
Like when I was a kid. My mother took 9, 10-year-olds to go see Animal House for my birthday. Yeah, my mom was cool.
Obviously.
So I mean, you know, but those comedy albums, and Dr. Demento. I still listen to Dr. Demento a lot.
Absolutely,
you know,
man.
That was funny. But I, you know, I was a mimic. I had an ear for it, and I found out what made people laugh, and I immediately was like, "That's it. That's for me."
That's excellent. And you know, I love too in the trailer that I saw that the voice actors talk about, I think it was Billy West who said it, that there's a rhythm and almost musical quality to getting a voice right. And that's something that I think, I mean, I told you, I'm on radio too, so I do half-ass voices as well. And but that's the thing you learn. It is like learning music, like learning a song. You're listening to the rhythm. You're listening to the pitch. And that's how you get a voice.
Yeah, no, and you need to, you know, not only do you need that musicality for the actual delivery of the line, you need that musicality for timing. Sometimes it's like, you know, you get a script and you have to read something and it's literally, it has to last 2.25 seconds. That's how much time you have to say this particular line. And if you know how to break it down into beats and where to, you know, snap that, and make it fit, it's incredibly important to one's ability to do this job. And we talk about that in the film, you know. There's a lot of people in voiceover that are like ex-musicians or trained singers, or, you know, it's wild. I mean, look at Jess Harnell. The guy was like a rock and roll singer on the Sunset Strip, and now he's one of the Animaniacs. You know,
awesome.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, like, yeah.
And so, you know, Billy West, an accomplished guitar player, used to play rock bands all over Boston, you know, in the 70s. You know, he knows the guys from Aerosmith, you know what I mean? Like, from playing with them in bars, you know, like Ren and Stimpy, that guy.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
The Red M&M used to jam with Aerosmith.
And, of course, it's Philip J. Fry as well, and the Professor.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
You know,
Zoidberg
yes.
traded licks with Steve Perry.
Awesome to learn that. Awesome to learn that Zoidberg is kind of Billy West's Lou Jacoby. And I never put that together.
Yeah.
Great old character actor for people listening that don't know who the hell we're talking about. But
and he was a marble mouth, too. I love that. I love Zoidberg.
Oh yeah.
I have a Zoidberg keychain. I don't have. I don't have a Bender keychain. I have a Zoidberg keychain.
I can appreciate that.
I still have it. I love Zoidberg. Zoidberg.
And
perfect. We always did dueling Zoidbergs. Yeah. Just like I loved it.
Did you ever have to pick up a line for Billy to do instead of him or anything like that? Because you got a good.
No, there were times when, like, if Billy couldn't make it to a table read, like, I would fill in.
Oh, okay.
You know, I'd do the professor, and no. And then, you know, so I could do the professor, like, I got a good, if you were to grade it on a 1 to 100, I'd say my professor's about an 89.
I like it.
I give myself a good score on the professor. My Zoidberg is a 94.
Oh, yeah.
The Wine Spectator gives my fucking my Zoidberg a 94.
I like it. Now, you mentioned table reads. How often are you guys able to record together? I think people might be under a misconception of how much and how often you're able to all be together and truly do a session.
It really helps with the flow of the scene. If you do it together as an ensemble, sometimes scheduling doesn't permit that.
Sure.
But if we're able to do that, it's, you know, that's where it's at. That's where you get the magic, you know, but you know, as long as you know your cast and you've read with them before and you have to read solo, if that happens, you kind of get the idea of where, you know, where you sit in the, you know, in the scene, you know, and as far as what you're, fellow actors, what choices they're going to make, you know. So it's, yeah.
I also know that, and we talked about this at the Paley Center, she was there. We had to praise Andrea Romano because she is like the best. And I was wondering, by all means, go on about her, but are there other voice directors that are in the film as well?
Oh, yeah. There are a bunch of Andrea Romano, Chris Zimmerman, Charlie Adler,
cool.
Lisa Schaefer. Andrea Toyas, who's a video game director, Chris Borders, also video game director. There's a bunch of people. Peter Hastings. I mean, he won Emmys with Animaniacs, and he did Kung Fu Panda for Nickelodeon.
Awesome.
Like we try to get everybody in there. I miss Jack Fletcher though. Jack Fletcher is a great guy, great friend of mine, and we weren't able to get his interview. But he's a great guy. He's an amazing guy. I did Princess Mononoke with him and all the Final Fantasies and stuff like that. And,
cool.
And Miyazaki stuff. Like, he's just an incredible director.
That's awesome.
We got them. We got casting directors. We got agents. I mean, we got all sorts of people. We got it covered. We got historians from AFI. We locked it down.
That's cool.
Yeah, you know, it's everything you always want to know about voiceover. You know,
I would think that with the internet and also things like San Diego Comic-Con, that the fan culture around animation is at an all-time high. I mean, I'm always impressed with the size of the crowds at Comic-Cons that have these voiceover panels and stuff. And have you noticed the rise in the last few years of that kind of fan culture?
I definitely have seen growth. It's definitely gotten bigger and gotten more diverse, and there's so much stuff. There's a saturation now. You know, I mean, like there's a bunch of stuff going on for all ages. Adult cartoons. The proliferation of adult cartoons is amazing, and the fans are rabid. I mean, it's all changing. There's more and more people coming to these conventions. There's more and more people that are showing up to these shows and really coming together. And you know, it's social media definitely helps. I mean, social media, you know, helped create the buzz for this film, you know, so, I've definitely seen growth.
That's excellent, man. Well, to wrap up, it's premiering, what is the date that it's premiering again? It's in January.
January 7th.
Excellent.
2014.
And it sounds
iTunes.
Like iTunes, and I would imagine cable systems as well, or just iTunes as far as
the demand? I think so. Well, check out Viewtopia.com for other video on demand content.
Okay.
But January 7th, 2014, baby.
That sounds great. Well, hey, man, congratulations. Yes. It really looks great based on the trailers and the people you got. And like you said, there's a strong fan community out there. It's just getting them awareness to know that the movie's out there. So I'm glad you decided to come by Word Balloon and let the people know.
Absolutely. Thank you, John. I appreciate it.
Hey, this is Bender. And you're listening to Word Balloon Podcast, baby. Oh, yeah.
Isn't he awesome? Real down-to-earth guy, honestly. It's been a pleasure meeting and speaking to John DiMaggio, and I hope we get more chances in the future to talk to John, because he's a very funny guy and a good guy. All right, let's turn to another good guy, Heath Corson. Ben Blacker, when we did the San Diego podcasting panel, asked me if I could get Heath on. We already had 7 people on the panel, and, you know, that's a lot, especially to, like, squeeze in 45 minutes of talk, so... I said, you know, is it okay if he doesn't? But I promise I want him on Word Balloon. And he said, well, you know, as we get closer, I'm writing this adaptation of Justice League War for an animated movie. So I'm like, that's fantastic. You know, let's fire something up. Then he emails me and says, hey, man, I'm going to be in town. It was actually a month ago. It was during Thanksgiving weekend. And he said, you know, can we get together and talk? So what the hell? He was staying downtown. My radio studio is downtown. Had him come to the Prudential Building and up to the 27th floor. I showed him around the radio station. We sat down in our studio, and we had a great chat about his great podcast, the Nerdist Writers Panel Comic Edition, and also his beginning work in animation, but a long association in comic books, as you'll learn. We'll be talking with Heath Corson for the next hour right here on Word Balloon.
Here we go.
Here we go. It's happening. It's
yes,
coming
it
true.
Actually it's actually
here we
happening.
Go.
All right, we're good. Oh, my. If I can give you a George Takei, oh, my. Heath Corson, welcome to Word Balloon.
Thank you so much, John. Look at this.
I'm very thrilled because it's rare that I get to do live in-studio interviews. Because
I am in studio.
It's true. He's in the beautiful 100.3 FM studios, and he's. I showed him the wall of comic book prints. I never get to acknowledge that on
it's
the show.
It's very cool. It's very. I'm just thrilled to be here.
It's my pleasure, man. Seriously.
This is great.
Thank you for coming on, and also thank you for you and Ben and the rest of you on the Nerdist comic writers panel.
That's right. We do the Nerdist writers panel comic edition. Myself as and Ben Blacker and Adam Beechin and Len Wein, and we have a fantastic time. And we're fans of you as well.
Oh, thanks, man. Thank you very
we
much.
We really are.
No, it's a good conversation. I enjoy hearing you guys get together and your theme shows or when you have a good interview and stuff. It's
we do. We have fun. You know, we have a good time. Awesome. We're the animated Fantastic Four, I believe.
Yeah, you were saying. Yeah. Who's Herbie again?
Adam Beechin is Herbie the Robot because he can quote you chapter and verse on pretty much every comic he's ever read his entire life.
Outstanding.
I mean, he can tell you, oh, that panel appears as the top page of page 15. It's unbelievable. He's amazing.
Are you guys, I mean, I know because you are all very busy, and I know just being by myself how tough it is.
Yeah, you're a one-man band.
Well, to put out a weekly podcast, like what kind of schedule are you guys on?
You know, we're catch as catch can. We go out there and we try to grab whoever we can, whenever we can. And then it's the sort of, hey, are you available to interview so-and-so with me? And we try to put together good collections of smart people, and then we get together about as often as we possibly can, which ends up being about once a month.
Okay.
And we'll try to do one or two episodes at that time, but very rarely these days are all four of us available in the same time, you know?
I understand.
It gets super crazy.
Sure, man.
Yeah.
So do you tape at Meltdown? Where do you guys...
We tape at Meltdown, yeah. Okay. Meltdown above, there's a studio right above the comic floor, so we are actually in there. Sequestered all the way back in the Sanctum Sanctorum. It's way fun. I gotta say, man. When we all get together, it's big fun. And even any grouping of us is we have a good time. We did one with Ben and his wife, Jenny Wade.
I heard that one.
Made me. It was so funny just talking to them and getting their point of view on nerd culture.
I understand.
And hearing what it looked like from the outside.
Yeah, well, and it's interesting because Jenny, on the one hand, has got one foot in the nerd culture.
Absolutely.
Being an actress, and then
absolutely, she's been sort of at the crossroads of a lot of really interesting stuff. And then to hear like what it's like being on the inside as an actress, and then also to hear what it's like being on the outside, going, hey, I show up to these things and this is what these people are wearing and what they're saying and this is what's interesting to me and this is what's not. And I think one of the most interesting things that came out of that, and that was a really good show, was talking about the boundaries and firewalls for nerd culture and basically what people are open to having people in and what they're not. So it was really cool. That was a really fun one.
Excellent. Now you're currently writing animation, and you know, we'll tease the fact that the new Justice League War direct-to-video animated movie.
That's
You're the adapter of that.
I am. I'm the writer of that, and I was thrilled to do so, and that was huge fun.
I was pleased to learn as we were walking up to the studio, you told me that your comic cred goes before that, though. That
that's
you have a
right.
Connection to Jill Thompson.
I do. My friend Jill Thompson. I grew up in Chicago, and I did theater out here for years and years and years. And one of the things I was always super excited about was Jill's Scary Godmother comics, and I wanted to adapt, put them on the stage. So I wrote to Jill Thompson. I emailed her, and Jill showed up to see another show that I did to sort of check us out. The show was called Too Many Time Machines. It was about a bunch of kids who all had their time machines, and so they never practiced baseball. So the baseball team was always off, you know, flying kites with Ben Franklin or pulling pranks on Genghis Khan, and so they were always doing this stuff, and they never had time to practice. And Jill tried to sneak in very quietly and see one of our shows, and if you know what Jill Thompson looks like, it's very hard for Jill to sneak. So she came in, and I grabbed her after the show, and I was like, sorry, are you Jill Thompson? She's like, yeah, I kind of wanted to see what you guys were doing. And she really liked the adaptation. She liked the show. And this was, wow, this was a while ago. This had to be 2000, maybe 1999, maybe. And then I told her that I wanted to do a stage adaptation. She was really intrigued by the idea. So the two of us did an adaptation to the stage, and Jill designed the entire thing. So you walked into the theater and it looked like you were in a Jill Thompson comic book. So she, I mean, the whole thing was watercolors and It was unbelievable. And so we ended up running a Scary Godmother show in 2001 for, I think, something like 2.5 months. And it was a great experience. And so then someone from Mainframe Entertainment showed up and they said, this script is better than both scripts we've already paid to commission. So we want you to write this.
Wow.
And so they did an animated holiday special called Scary Godmother's Halloween Spooktacular, which aired 2003 and airs on Cartoon Network every Halloween around that. And that's the Halloween special, which
awesome,
was super great, which I wrote with Jill. Yeah. And she did, and it was so much fun. So that was my very first sort of comic-based thing. And at that point, I was like, I need to move to Los Angeles. They want me in Los Angeles. They didn't want me in Los Angeles, John. Took me a long time to realize that. They couldn't care less. But yes, hometown boy.
So what in between that and a
lot
Justice
of drinking, a lot of crying, you know, a lot of rocking
lot of,
myself to sleep.
A lot of Charlie Bukowski lifestyle.
Yeah, you know that, how it right. is. You know, I knocked around for a long time. I did a bunch of stuff. I did some pilots for Fox.
Okay.
A buddy of mine, Richie Keene, and I did some pilots for Fox. We wrote a short film called Hooked, which I think is out there somewhere, about... this was about, you know, in the Oscars, the Price Waterhouse guys who
yes.
always come out and say, hey, we're for Price Waterhouse.
The accountants. The
accountants.
The results of the awards.
That's right. This was a short film about those guys and what happened if the boss couldn't take his tickets to the Academy Awards because his wife wanted him to be at a PETA fundraiser. So he was raffling off the award, the tickets.
Okay.
And the schmuck in the office who has a crush on the girl in accounting desperately wants to ask her out. He ends up getting the tickets. And then everyone in the office is sort of jockeying to go with him. And then sooner or later, everyone in Hollywood shows up to try to go with him. Really funny little short. Richie directed it. We spent 3.5 months in. Whoa. That
yeah,
sounded
sorry, that's,
really.
It's anonymous text, but that's all right.
Anonymous text?
Yeah. Well, it's not anonymous, but yeah, it was. No, it's just my sister. It's oh, so funny. I, you know, you upgrade to whatever their current operating system is for iPhone,
and they change all your.
Yeah, all your presets are done.
That's
so,
right.
Yeah, needless to say.
Sounded
we'll be,
super ominous. I was like, someone's calling in.
It's Neo from the Matrix.
That's yeah. right, saying, like, stop this. He's gonna release something.
So you spent how much on the short?
Oh my gosh! You know, it was not much at all. I think
okay.
we did it for under $10,000 or something. But we spent 3.5 months
okay.
writing in coffee shops.
Of course.
Basically, we went to the places that had the worst coffee possible, so that we would finish our work and get the fuck out of there. Because we would go to these horrible places and we're like, what are we doing here? We'd work on Saturdays. We'd work after work. We went to a Starbucks once and a guy pulled a gun on me and tried to take my computer.
What part of LA?
Beverly Hills.
Oh, really? Wow.
Yeah. Guy walked in. He pulls a gun on me, shows me a gun in a Starbucks in a trench coat, points it at me and says, give me his computer. I couldn't do it because I figured with my luck, he'd sell something. With my luck, he'd take my ideas and he'd go sell it.
Hey, man,
so
I got a script you got to read. Right?
Yeah, I wouldn't give it to him. So he grabs the one side of the computer. I grab the other thing. And I'm basically like, dude, you're going to have to shoot me. Like, shoot me in a Starbucks.
Wow.
And in my head, I'm going, all right, if this is the way it happens, that's all right. Fine.
Oh, God.
My brains will get splattered in a Starbucks.
I was going to say, if you survive the incident, good story.
Go right? So the guy takes off. He tries to grab my computer. He takes off. He runs. I'm like frozen. I stand up and I go, that guy has a gun. And everyone turns around. The guy takes off. Cops show up. They chase him down. My friend comes back. Richie comes back from the bathroom. He goes, what the hell happened? There's 15 policemen here. And I tell him the story. He's like, I miss everything. So we end up, we do Hooked. It gets us a bunch of pilot. We do some
cool.
pilot, some
yeah.
blind script deals.
Okay.
We ended up making a pilot for Fox called Living with Abandon, which was about an abandonment therapy group. We're in the cold open. The therapist commits suicide, abandoning his abandonment therapy
so the
group.
Sitting there without the therapist? That's
yeah.
awesome.
Yeah. That's literally, you hear the guy blow his head off.
Oh,
really funny. Richie
yeah,
directed
man.
That. We produced that. And
cool.
So then I started doing some animation. And I did some work for Disney XD. I developed with a Cartoon Network. And I ended up doing an action digital series for Warner Brothers, under McG, for Wonderland Sound and Vision.
Wow.
And Richie Keene and I wrote that, and it was called Aim High, and it was about a high school hitman for the U.S. government. And the tagline was, killing's easy, high school's hard.
Awesome.
Really fun
That's
series.
That's a great idea. Absolutely.
We loved it, and it's made, you can find it on YouTube. It premiered as the first digital show on Facebook, and we ended up winning a Writers Guild Award for it, which was a huge surprise. Yeah,
that's fantastic.
It was amazing. And so the one thing I asked for coming out of that was, I went to my executive and I said, you've got to introduce me to the guys who are doing the Warner Brothers direct-to-DVD movies, because all I want to do is write one of these. And she was like, really? That's all you want? I was like, please. So she introduces me, my executive at the time, Lydia Antonini, introduces me to Alan Burnett.
Fantastic.
Which at the time they were doing, I think, Green Lantern, and I watched one of his episodes. I was over the moon for this stuff. And
it was just a couple of years ago.
A couple of years ago. And so I go to Alan, and I meet Alan, and he's like, what do you want to do? And I basically laid out what I wanted to do, and he was like, that's a great idea. And he passes it up the food chain, and of course it gets killed. And so he's like, nope, that's not going to happen. So it took a year. And so I kept checking in with him, and I kept bothering him, and I kept checking in with him. And finally he calls me, and he's like, we've got something for you. And I was like, that's amazing. What is it? And he's like, it's Justice League. And I go crazy. So he gives me the book. He sends me the book. And I was already a fan. I think I already owned it. And he says, well, you need to read this, and you need to have your take prepped, because on Monday you're going into a meeting with Mike Carlin at DC Entertainment and Jeff Johns. And me.
Wow.
So you need to talk about what it is you want to do.
Man, that's like, hey, guess what? You got to make The Adventures of Huck Finn, and Mark Twain's going to be
Yeah.
there. All right.
So I'm like, okay, no problem. So that was a stressful weekend where I got to figure out basically what am I doing differently.
Right, because this is, you know, if people don't know, Justice League War, the first arc of the New 52.
That's right.
The new origin, if you will, of how the Justice League get together.
That's right. And it's a little bit different. We got some different characters. And so I had to go in and basically say, here's what's going to be the same. Here's what's going to be different. Here's what I want to do with it. And, you know, because I don't think, for me, when I watch the DTVs, I like it when it's not the exact same story as the comic book.
Absolutely.
It doesn't, I don't like the idea of like, oh, I've read this and it's a carbon copy. Now, there are some exceptions.
I was going to say,
when I saw The Dark Knight Returns, that was what I wanted.
Amen.
Like, I have to say. And even then, there were moments that I was like, oh, they didn't do the narration. How dare they not do the narration? But then I went, oh, you know what? That might have taken me out of it. Like, there were some moments that I missed it, but there were some moments that I, because, you know, I think I listened to the Bob Goodman commentary, because he's a writer of that
one. Oh, you know, I haven't heard the commentary.
And I listened
yet,
to him talk about it, and I was like, that makes a lot of sense, what they're talking about. And I've talked to Jay, who was the director, about it. Jay threw in some stuff that I was like, that's amazing. I'm going to point out one thing, because Jay's a genius.
Absolutely. No, I'm
there's a moment when the Joker is stabbing Batman, and he does not stop. Like, it happens like 15, 20 times, and it's just such a visceral punch in the gut moment, and you all of a sudden realize how connected these two guys are on a visceral level. And I talked to Jay about it, and he was just like, oh yeah, there's no reason for that guy to stop. He is just going and going. And I was like, that's a great extrapolation of what's already there.
And not there, obviously, in a static image in the graphic novel or in the, you know, in the comics as they were coming out.
Yeah.
That's great, man. And, you know, James Tucker, I first got to interview him when they were doing Batman Brave and Bold, and Mike Jelenic.
And I listened to that interview,
and
he's great.
Yeah, I'm a big fan, and I'm so happy for him kind of getting the Bruce Timm chair right now and being the big guy.
Yeah.
And you know, did you see that Scooby-Doo Mask of the Blue Falcon?
Yes.
Isn't
genius.
That excellent?
So much fun.
I keep telling, any time I see someone that hasn't seen it, it's like, you got to see this, because it really does touch on that original fun of Scooby-Doo.
Oh, absolutely.
And the fun of it being at the comic convention and everything.
Well,
no,
Brave
it's just
and the
so
Bold
good.
Felt like, you know, the old Batman cartoons, you know?
Absolutely. Or Earth 2 or Dick Sprang 1950s Batman.
Yeah. You know, he's so much fun
and
just such a smart guy and has an amazing ear. So I was really Tucker's a guy who sits there and won't say anything for the longest time, and then he'll say one thing and it's dead on.
Cool.
You know, he'll just go like, that reads not right. And you go, oh, my gosh, he's right. you know, or he'll figure out a story point that you go, ooh, we totally missed that. And he's super on it.
Did he direct this one, or did Jay? Or
no, Jay directed one.
Well, that's
and Jay is a master of action.
Like
I mean,
you said, Dark Knight, man, what a that is so that and Batman Year One are really such wonderful adaptations and everything.
I was a big Under the Hood fan too. I thought Under the Hood was
absolutely
great. I thought the voices were amazing on Under the Hood.
DiMaggio got to meet him in New York.
Yeah.
And that was mostly he was there for Brave and Bold and Aquaman. I'm like, wait a minute, man. Everyone gives it up to Hamill for his Joker.
DiMaggio's Joker
it was great though. It
really, yeah.
You know, it's great to see a Joker, much like in Dark Knight Returns, that is a physical threat.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. This was a bigger, beefier kind of gangster Joker that kind of, I guess, more like a Heath Ledger, but even, I think, even more physical than Ledger's performance.
Oh, I
really
think so. Yeah. And DiMaggio's, he's really interesting. And that, it was an interesting choice. You know, it was such an interesting choice, especially since we were all attuned to Hamill.
Yep.
To hear something very, very different.
Yep.
And same thing with Emerson in Dark Knight Returns.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Which I thought was a very bizarre choice, but worked.
And it's and again, Andrea Romano. I mean, David Selby as Commissioner Gordon.
Yeah.
That's the thing. I mean, and, you know, we're close enough in the same age to see some of these character actors do these parts, along with Pete Weller doing Batman.
Uh-huh.
God, I want to see Pete Weller do a live-action Batman do a Dark Knight Batman.
Totally.
And nothing against Affleck, but yeah, it would have been nice to maybe see him go up against the new
guy. He's amazing. That was really interesting. I mean, even there were moments in that where you just heard him go like, and you just go, oh my gosh, I get it. It's so creeped out. What a great call that was.
Yeah, I'm a fan.
You know, she did that with Jason O'Mara, with who's the Batman in Justice League War. And you go, really? That guy? Like, he's from
now, I know
UK.
That name, but help, all right, help me. Yeah, what
he's
else?
He's from Terra Nova. He just was on Vegas.
Okay.
Amazing, amazing actor. He comes in, Irish actor.
Was he one of the deputies on Vegas?
Yes.
Okay.
He's one of the deputies on Vegas.
Man, I loved that show. I was so bummed that show didn't make it.
I know, right?
Great season.
He did the American version of Life on Mars.
Was he?
He's the guy.
Oh,
yes.
Yeah, so I know
he's
exactly.
The guy.
Yeah, of course. I didn't even recognize him in Vegas being the
I
same
know,
guy.
I know, right?
That's
so
funny.
He does this amazing American accent, which, so he walks in with this like slight Irish lilt, and you go, this is our Batman? First of all, super fan. Shakes everybody's hand, but like, he goes, hey man, this is such a great script. He's like, I've been a fan of Batman. We used to read it in college. We read Dark
Fantastic.
Knight Returns. So I was so excited that
That's
I get to
awesome.
Be Batman, and this is my thing. And I was like, oh. You know, when you meet people who come in and are excited to do the work, and they bring that to it, it's so much fun.
Absolutely.
It's so much fun. So he comes in, and he gets on the mic. And he does the gravelly Christian Bale thing without the real clench, like effortlessly. And you go, oh, I get it. Like, you get it. And it was super cool.
That's excellent.
It
man.
Was super cool. She was right on with this casting for this group.
You know, she's amazing. We're going to give it up to her. I think we could spend an hour talking about it.
Right?
And I'm happy to do it because now I agree. And, you know, to do that stuff and then the Boondocks and get the humor and, you know, the sensibilities
right.
for that kind of show.
Right.
She's just so smart.
She
and
really is.
Like you said, it's through experience. I mean, that's the thing. You don't want to be like when I saw her at the red carpet for Brave and Bold, I'm like, oh, I don't want to be an ass and be like, you know, because sometimes people are sensitive about their age and stuff. But it's true. It's like you're so good at what you do.
So good at what you do. And so humble and sweet and adorable about it.
Yeah.
And like, and at the same time, when she is in the booth, like you could see people whip through the performance and she can get you through a full script in a couple of hours. And
cool.
That's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's amazing. I mean, as a radio guy, you know, like, it's not easy.
Oh, yeah.
And she can whip people through it.
Good.
And it's just, it's really incredible.
I'm psyched, man. No, everything you've told me now makes me more excited
for
it.
Dude, it's a good movie. I got to say,
I'm
super proud of the script, and I know that it came out great. The designs are unbelievable. Jay has put, I've seen some of the action that Jay's done, and it's just, across the board, it's a great team.
Now, it's still coming out, but, like, you know, are you hopefully going to be in the mix in terms of hope? And I know there might be NDAs involved here and what you can and can't talk about, but, you know, are you hopefully going to get other assignments from these guys?
I sure hope so. Yeah, I would love to be able to do more. I can neither confirm nor deny, but there have been no announcements at this point.
Understood.
But it was one of the best experiences I've ever had, and I would love to continue working with them.
That's good, man, and I hope that the experience, too, gives you the opportunity to, you know, strut your stuff on a few conventions and stuff like that. I know we were in San Diego and stuff, and
yeah.
Ben asked me, he's like, oh, can Heath be on the panel for the podcast? And I really did. I'm like, oh, man, I'm like, we got seven people. But no, we'll do what we can to get you on there next year. But yeah, I want to see, I hope you guys get to start entertaining.
I gotta say, it's so weird because I just think of myself as a fan, so to be doing the work as well is it's alien, but I still get so geeked out when it's like, oh my gosh, Alan Burnett is my executive. And you know, we interviewed Alan on the Nerdist writers panel. He's the nicest guy in the world. I know that I've been very blessed to work with some amazing people over at Warner Brothers Animation. They have an amazing crew of great people that put out really top-notch work and consistently. And I think everybody knows that. But, you know, I sort of geeked out when I first met him because I was like, Batman the Animated Series. That was my Batman.
Sure.
Like, Batman the Animated Series was my Batman. That was the Batman I came home from school, and I watched that. And I was like, Kevin Conroy is that voice. Mark Hamill is my Joker. Like, I was like, Alan was one of the main guys in that Batman Beyond. Like, super, as far back as Super Friends, every awesome piece of animation Alan Burnett has touched. And now I'm sitting in here cracking story with the guy, and I consider him a friend and a mentor. How cool is that?
That's fantastic,
like,
man.
I'm just lucky to be able to do what I get to do.
I hear you. Well, that's the thing, and I really think on the animation side, like you say, going back decades, they've always had comic book people in the mix.
Yeah.
Your guy Len writing as much, almost as much animation as, you know, maybe not that much.
Almost Marv Wolf, but back to Steve Gerber on G.I. Joe.
Yeah.
I mean, like some of them.
Marty Pascoe.
Right. Yes. Yes.
Denny O'Neill adapting his own stuff for the animated series, as he did Steranko adapting stuff. I mean, that's the great thing that I really do think that DC and Warner's, from an animation standpoint.
I agree.
It's interesting, the comparison, too, that I think finally on the movie side, you know, DC is finally getting up to speed. Television, they've had it for decades.
They've had it for a long time.
And, you know, I'm assuming you're an Arrow fan as well.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Sure.
Good stuff.
Sure.
And yeah, now it seems like we'll see what happens with the next Man of Steel. I should ask you because, you know, this is good geek cred time
and
stuff.
Sure. Let's go. Let's do it.
So Man of Steel, what'd you think?
You know, I
that's
is that enough? That's my you know. I have to say visually I thought it was great. There was no joy in the movie, and that was the thing. I love, as much as the next guy, I'm up for a badass Superman. I'm up for an emo Superman. I'm up for a Superman who's carrying the weight of the world. I wish that there was some fun in there. And that's sort of what I missed. Now, fair warning, I'm a huge fan of the Donner Superman.
Sure.
Only because I'm the world's biggest Gene Hackman as Lex Luthor guy.
The greatest criminal mind of our century?
Australia. I mean, I love Lex Luthor. That is what I have a Gene Hackman as Lex Luthor action figure, which I don't think anybody's ever seen before that comes with swap out hair.
Hilarious.
You know, as a bald guy, Lex Luthor is one of the few guys we get to point to that's one of my favorites. So, you know, I run around the house and yell for Miss Tessmacher. But
we all ran around the house yelling for Miss Tessmacher. Man, for Ryan.
I have to say, for that, that was one of my favorite things
ever.
I went when I was 5 years old. My dad took
hilarious.
Me. And now I feel like an old guy, right? And so then you see Man of Steel, and I just missed some of the fun.
Yeah, the wonder.
Wonder. And let me clarify. I didn't mind it with Batman. I thought it works perfectly with
Batman's
the Nolan
a dark figure,
stuff.
Yeah.
Batman's a dark figure. I want, like, that second Batman is maybe one of the best crime movies I've ever seen. That said, I want Superman to have a little bit more lightness, which is why these two characters running up against each other works.
Indeed. Absolutely.
I had no problem with Cavill's performance. I liked his
performance. Oh, no, I think he's – and also it's – almost creepy how much he looks like a Lanil Yu drawn
Superman. Oh, interesting.
Birthright.
Good call.
And yeah, every time I saw his face, it's like, oh my. And I never, I don't know why. I mean, I've seen the Tudors that sandal, the Sword and Sandal movie he made too.
Uh-huh.
And I can't remember the name of it right
either.
Now. But that's the thing. No, I really bought him as Superman, and I thought he was great. Yeah, along with the joy, my little thing was too, just a little more concern.
Yeah.
In that way that, because some of my friends are like, you know, something that's a little too Boy Scouty for today's modern age. But just like when he saves the army, and Christopher Maloney says, this man isn't our enemy. Before he said that line, he can't just say, Commander, is everybody all right?
Yeah.
Just something that throwaway.
Well, you know? For me, what's interesting about Superman is Superman cares about us. He walks among humans
hiding to be
one of us. Right. Like, it's not a Superman who has contempt for humanity. That's not interesting. It's a Superman who's... he's envious.
Or if anything, he grew up among us anyway. So, yeah, he thinks, well, I'm just helping out people. And that's the other thing that bothered me about the Kents. I wanted a less of protecting him and a little bit more of, no, Clark, we help people. That's what the Kents do.
Yeah.
Because those are the life lessons.
I thought that's an interesting point.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I thought the casting was great. I thought they delivered the lines they were given as best as they could.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I just thought that little element, because that's the man part of Superman.
Yes.
And that's what they get.
That's what I was missing.
Yeah.
That's what I was missing.
So.
Also, the thing that I was saying as I would walk out of there to anyone who was listening, spending 20 minutes on Krypton is a little like giving me 20 minutes of how great the Wayne marriage was.
Oh, I got to tell you, I loved Krypton.
Did you?
Oh, I did. And in fact, because I want to ask you about Thor.
Listen, I thought it was beautiful to see. I would watch a whole movie of it. It doesn't matter because the character doesn't take off until he gets to Earth. So for the character, it's a big who cares. It's
but
like,
for Jor-El to be as involved as he was in the rest of the story,
I had some issues about that. I was sort of like, I don't know why I care.
I liked it, and again, just because of what we were denied until the Donner cut of Superman 2 as well.
That's right.
Or that extended first movie where after he kind of does his first saving, he goes back to the fortress in that extended cut.
That's right.
And there's a little more interplay between Brando and Christopher Reeve.
Yeah.
So I didn't mind that. And I kind of liked Russell Crowe as badass Jor-El.
I liked Russell Crowe as badass Jor-El. I just couldn't. I was like, why are we on Krypton for so long? Like, do you want to see 20 minutes of the Waynes having a great marriage?
Yeah, but that's
we're going to a ball and look at how happy we are.
But
who cares?
But for 20 minutes, we got, and speaking of Steve Gerber, the world of Krypton.
Yeah.
And I really, I mean, those were my favorite stories, among my favorite stories growing up. And in fact, dovetailing to Thor, the second Thor movie, that's when I thought, man, the stuff on Asgard was as spectacular as the stuff on Krypton.
I haven't seen it yet. Is it great? Is it cool?
Yeah, it's excellent. No, and I was going to ask.
I can't wait to see. And the new Captain America looks cool.
Oh, my God. It looks fantastic. I liked Man of Steel enough, but I really felt Iron Man 3 was the best Superman movie or superhero movie of the year.
I have to say, I agree with you because.
Well, see what you say when you see Thor. Thor shot. I mean, I liked the first movie well enough.
Totally.
The second movie exceeded expectations.
She walked out. She's a huge Thor fan. She's like, well, I mean, he's handsome. He's handsome.
Exactly.
And she's like, that Thor movie was pretty good. I was
sure
was. Really? She's like, yeah, it was really good. I was like, huh.
Interesting.
I couldn't believe it. So she's like, we should go see the second Thor movie.
You know,
I was like, wow.
And again, it's based on a Walt Simonson story.
That's right.
And it just had that good fantasy element to the point where I'm like, Thor is Marvel's Lord of the Rings, and we'll see if Guardians ends up being their Star Wars.
Yeah.
But that's why I'm like, holy Christ, between Avengers and the individual hero movies, and then you see Thor, and it's like I said, I mean, just with Asgard and everything, it's like great world building. And I'm psyched to see what they do with Guardians.
Yeah,
but it's
I
like
agree.
They really have all their bases covered.
These
movie-wise.
Guys are building it. I mean, they really do it right, don't they? They really nail it down. I thought Iron Man 3 was fantastic because you know what? It was about the man behind the mask. It was about Tony Stark and his humanity and what makes a hero. And I thought that was genius.
Yep.
I loved the patchwork of the action sequence where he's got the one glove and the one boot, and I was like, this is great. It was just so much fun.
And a good solution to that problem as a Hollywood producer of, we've just spent $40 million to get Robert Downey in our movie.
How do we not have him with a mask over him all
the
time?
And I always love that scene of his face in the mask and the interface with the
very smart.
All the graphics and stuff.
Very smart.
I thought that was cool. But I like the remote control armor.
Other than when we have Spider-Man, the first thing that has to happen is someone has to slash half of his mask off so we can see that it's the actor, right?
Yeah. You know? Well, and again, it'll be interesting with Affleck, you know, doing Batman and stuff like that. So.
I think it's going to be interesting. I mean,
were you kind of like, oh, really?
Well, let me say this. I don't know that I want a David Goyer Justice League. I don't know that I want a humorless, just flat
is
action.
Is it Goyer or is it Snyder?
Because Snyder will be directing, but Goyer's doing the script.
But that's the thing, and David's from comics, and I mean, you know, David wrote a lot of good comics. A
lot of good comics.
Including that little 8-page Superman that he got grief over when he renounced his U.S. citizenship and everything. I think David's a really good writer, but yeah, I worry more about Snyder because I go back to Watchmen.
Yeah.
I liked the Watchmen movie a lot.
I really did. I have to say, I agree with you. I really liked the, and as a super fan, I mean, I read Watchmen. Watchmen was very important to me because I read Watchmen as it was coming out month to month.
Me too, man.
Which is not something a lot of people can even remember. Like, I think I went away to camp and I had my dad go get me 11 and 12 and send them to me while I was away at camp.
Hilarious.
Because I was such a freak about it.
I understand, man.
That was super important to me. And again, it was, you know, it's funny because we started talking about separating the adaptation from the media. So the comic book can't always be the movie. It can't be the animated piece. And yet, I think Watchmen, again, is another thing that you want it to be as close as possible.
Yeah.
But I thought that movie really captured something. I wanted it to be longer, but it hit all the main tentpoles for
me. I agree.
Me.
And it was appropriately cold.
Yes.
Because of the setting and the way the story is.
I agree.
But that's why I start to wonder if maybe it's Snyder.
Oh, definitely.
Who doesn't have a handle on, you know, we need a little happy moment.
Heart. It's totally missing the heart.
Even in Man of Steel, when he comes back and he knows about Krypton and he sees Diane Lane and he's like, Mom, I know who I am. I know where my people are. That's wonderful, Clark. And she starts crying and it's like, oh, Christ, give the kid 5 seconds of happiness, God's sake.
I know. There's just no heart there. I mean, even the moment where he figures out he could fly is like very cold. It's very removed and we're not connected. And see Batman, that's going to be really interesting. Mm-hmm. And then, but I don't know.
I've got high hopes for Luther.
I hope so.
Because, I go back and forth. I didn't like Spacey channeling
Hackman.
But I did, going back to what you're talking about, stabbing with the Joker scene, that kryptonite Shiv.
Yeah.
That was a real visceral Lex Luthor, I hate this guy moment.
That's right.
So that I really
like. Listen, I like Luthor. I'm afraid that we're going to connect to him because he's the most human of all of us. I mean, that's a problem.
Well, you're right. But then again, I do like the best, and I'm sure you agree, the best villains are the ones where you understand their motives.
Absolutely.
And there is part of you that is like, yeah, I understand why he's doing that. It's too bad he's made that choice, but I get it. I've seen the backstory. I understand why he is the way
he is.
So, and that is, did you ever read any of Elliot Magan's Superman novels from the 70s?
No, I don't think so.
Look on Amazon. He did one called Last Son of Krypton that came out just after the movie.
I
don't
remember
came out.
That, yeah.
And the second one was Miracle Monday.
Okay.
And it was great because it's in that Silver to Bronze Age continuity of Superman and Lex growing up together, and Superboy causing the baldness and stuff, and that's the goofy part of it. But the nice part, and Smallville I think tapped into this too, was that bit of regret on Superman's part that we were friends, he was my friend, and I do know him, and there were some scenes where they were captured together, and Superman is powerless, and they have to work together. And Lex knows him.
Right.
And I like that. And I miss that. And I guess in the reboot, I don't know exactly where.
Yeah, I don't know where we would land.
Yeah.
Now, what I like is someone who knows the hero well enough to know his weaknesses.
Exactly.
That's very interesting.
Yeah.
So I think you're right on with that. But I don't know. Obviously the Smallville stuff. Although I will tell you.
You guys talked about that, I want to say. Or at least you talked about the goofiness of Lex going bald. And
yeah, we
I
did.
That.
Yeah. But I'll humble brag here. I met Michael Rosenbaum, and he told me that I had a good head for being bald. And I was like, well, he would know.
Yeah, you look good.
This is a guy would know.
It works on you.
I know.
Absolutely, man.
A little Lex Luthor for you.
Certainly. Or if you wanted to do like classic Kingpin and stuff, we need to get
you the
jacket and the ascot.
Get me the jacket and the ascot. I look great in white. A little purple. Fantastic. I bulk up a little bit.
I'm telling you, man.
This is good.
It's
this is a
funny.
Good idea.
I like it. Jesus,
I could
man.
Cosplay as all the bald bad guys for San Diego.
The closest I've come to cosplay, I had to judge
a costume contest at a Cincinnati convention this
year.
And I'm like, oh, you know, maybe I'll dress up. And I'm like, so I went with the Penguin henchman look from the 66 Batman series, because it's just black sweatshirt, black pants, a derby. You put Goon on there.
Nice.
Boom.
Boom.
You know, so I, and it was great. And people knew exactly who I was. And I'm like, all right, that's a good cheap
well
costume.
Done.
So, yeah, that's been my Halloween go-to for a while now. Yeah, that's about it.
Good work.
So, what else? Like, are you going to get a chance to write any comics? Do you have an ambition to write comics?
I would love to write comic books. I will tell you, with everybody moving to Burbank, I'm hoping that maybe the guys I've worked with will put a word in for me.
Well, you got to, yeah, you just got to let it be known. That's how Loeb did it.
Yeah.
You know, so
Loeb that's
was,
right.
Yeah, I forget if it was just Warner Brothers Films or whatever, but yeah, hey, let them know that
I'm
going to write comics.
Well, Blacker and his, Ben Blacker and his partner Ben Acker have been doing some comic book stuff as well, and that came out of their Thrilling Adventure Hour stuff.
Of course.
And so I think a Marvel editor tapped them to do some stuff. I think their Deadpool annual just came out today, which I got to go to the comic book store and read.
True.
So plug for them.
Absolutely.
Shameless plug.
No, all good. No, Ben's a friend of the program.
Yeah.
Tom Fowler got me and Ben together.
Oh, okay.
Because Fowler did the poster for Thrilling Adventure.
That's right.
And he's like, you know, hey, I think he mentioned it to me, because I'm like, hey, man, I would love to talk to Ben, because I've been listening to Ben's show before he was doing the comics podcast and everything.
Yeah.
And I, you know, again, I like talking to writers, because that's where the story ideas come from.
Right.
And as much as like my fallback example is like Angel, I loved that show. Buffy was good. I loved Angel. I thought Angel was awesome.
Okay.
And I'm like, look, David Boreanaz, he's a great character and a great actor and stuff. But I know that it's, you know, the Tim Minears and it's the Whedons and all those guys. They're the
Somebody's pulling the strings.
Yeah, they're the story keepers. They're the
character keepers. That's right.
On these long extended kind of series that do last several years. And
that's
you've
got
to kind of put the character through different challenges and really define the character
season to season. It sort of goes back to what we were talking about with Iron Man 3. Like, these characters are made great by the challenges. So you have to test them to the breaking point. Like, it's so fun to break and twist and bust these characters. And I don't know who said this. I'm gonna attribute it to Vince Gilligan, but I don't know that it was Vince. But someone asked about these great X-Files. I was a big X-Files fan.
Me too.
These great X-Files episodes. And Vince, I believe it was Vince, said, I hate the characters. That's the secret. I love putting them through painful shit.
Hilarious.
So I'm going to put them in as much pain as possible, and that makes a great episode.
That's interesting.
And
you
know, really interesting.
Giffen thinks that way with comic books, so
yeah.
That makes sense. I like
that. I mean, you got to bang them up in order to make a hero. Then
absolutely.
That's what's really interesting.
That's
you know,
cool.
It's not interesting to see, you know, to double back around about Justice League. It's not interesting to see a bunch of guys getting along and doing it well. That's not super interesting. Even in sports, you want to see them falling apart and bringing it together.
Sure.
And what are those things that you overcome in order to become a hero?
Absolutely.
That's very cool to me.
I'm with you.
Yeah.
That's cool. We before we started rolling, we talked about you, you know, doing the podcast with Len Wein.
Yes.
And that's got to be really trippy.
It's very trippy.
Anytime I get to interview those guys that I was reading as a little kid.
It's bizarre, isn't it?
It's like talking to Santa Claus.
Yeah.
Because they were like, you know, our storytellers. And for real, man, Denny O'Neill, Neil Adams, Len, all these guys, when I meet them, Marty Pascoe, who's become a friend and stuff, it's like, that's awesome. I mean, it just blows my
mind. It's amazing.
Like you were saying with
Alan Burnett. You say, like, hey, where'd this come from? And they're like, oh my gosh, I was, you know, I couldn't believe it. I was sick and I was in San Francisco for the weekend and I had a Doctor Strange do and I had to make this. And you're just like, oh my gosh, you know, it is a little, you see the, you meet the wizard behind the curtain.
Exactly.
It's really interesting. And Len has stories for days. Like, he's the only, he says, I'm the only guy who wears my resume. Every piece of clothing that he has one of his characters on it. Like, he'll have he'll have a Wolverine jacket, he'll have an X-Men t-shirt, like, it's unbelievable. He's hilarious.
That's excellent.
So it's really interesting to hear him talk. Len said, one of the most amazing things, because we've talked on our show about continuity,
mm-hmm.
and about ending continuity and rebooting something, and why every 20 years or so, you basically need to restart. You know, Marvel and DC have to restart their universes because there's no more stories. You can't be chained. And I was always like, why do you need to do that? Can't you just figure out more? And Len said, continuity chains your best writer to your worst writer. And I thought about that and I was like, that's a genius thing to say, because even the best guy is in service to the thing the worst guy did a year ago, because he's got to incorporate that and roll it up.
Absolutely.
And I don't know anybody save Grant Morrison who can do that and make it work all the time, because I've talked to Grant and he was like, oh, I just took it all as the same timeline. You know, when he was doing All-Star Batman and when he was doing Batman Incorporated, he's like, at this point, he was young and he was, you know, feeling full of verve. And by the 80s, he's gone through a lot of pain and that's what made him dark. And he was in his late 30s and he kept it all in the same timeline. And I was like, that's genius.
Absolutely.
You
it
know,
all happened to him.
It all happened to him.
Yep.
And that's what's made him this. But I don't know anybody else who can think that way and, and who knows all that stuff.
And to Len's point, and it's funny because I had never read JLA Rock of Ages until I heard Kevin Smith raving about it on his podcast. And I'm like, yeah, you know that, because I don't know about you, but I had a little period where I checked out of comics.
Okay.
Because, you know, it was either buy comics or have money to date women.
Right.
And women won.
Sure.
As they should.
Sure. Good. Nice.
But it was around college that I came back for a while with Dark Knight and stuff. But in that late JLA Rock of Ages period, you had Electric Blue Superman.
Yes.
And that is such the annoying sore thumb of that movie.
Uh-huh.
What the fuck's with Superman?
What is going on? A red Superman and blue Superman. I mean, yeah, I mean, this is way deep,
but
you know.
But again, all the writers they had to deal with the fact that, okay, it's Superman, different powers, and mm-hmm. This is his deal now, at least for now. Yikes.
Yeah.
Woof.
Well, we've talked a lot at one time or another about wide crossovers, when the company says, okay, Atlantis is going to attack, and it's going to attack in every single comic book. So now everyone from Nova to Spider-Man is going to have to fight Atlantis. And it's like, and Submariner. And you're just like, oh, really?
But the hell's Speedball going to do against Atlantis?
Right.
All right. Yeah.
And it's like, I've planned, you know, we've talked to writers who say, I've planned a three-issue series.
Three.
Or whatever it is, six.
Yeah,
you know, we talked
to
Adam Glass, and he was like, I've been planning this six issues, and then all of a sudden on my fifth issue, I got to do this crossover. And then I'm off the book.
Yeah.
And people go, well, whatever happened? And he's like, I never got to finish that story. And you go, how is that even possible? It's amazing, isn't it? I mean,
yeah.
That's rough.
No, I agree. Are there ideas that you would want to explore, original ideas and original characters?
Oh, absolutely. I have a ton of original stuff I would love to do in comic book form, and there's characters I would love to get my hands on. I would love to
DC and Marvel characters you wouldn't mind.
I'm a big Great Lakes Avengers.
Hilarious.
Would love to do
have
Great
you met
Lakes
Slott
Avengers.
Yet? Have
no.
you met Dan Slott? You got
no.
Dan Slott, man.
I would love to meet that. I would love She-Hulk. I would loved it when he was on She-Hulk.
Absolutely.
Would love to do a She-Hulk, Great Lake Avengers.
Funny.
Squirrel Girl.
Of course.
I'm a big fan of Squirrel Girl.
Of course.
Power Man and Iron Fist. I think you got to do
I'm
it.
I'm a huge Power Man and
Are
Iron
you?
Fist. Absolutely.
I was a big fan of that.
I'm psyched for the Netflix stuff.
I know.
I'm hoping.
Right?
Yeah.
I'm trying to get a job on that stuff.
Oh, that'd be great.
I would love. I'm like, how have I not gotten a call?
Oh,
I was like,
gonna
get me a call on that.
Are you listening?
I need to be on one of those, please. I want to be on Jessica Jones. I want to be on Power Man and Iron Fist. I would do Daredevil.
Have you met Brian yet? What Marvel guys have you met other than Len?
What Marvel guys have we met?
Because I know you guys are like, and it's okay, but you know, yeah, I know you guys are.
We've been DC. We've been a little DC heavy.
Adam's DC.
I know.
I understand. Both Adams, little, Glass and Beecham. Yes.
I know. We've been a little DC heavy.
That's all right.
I don't know what Marvel guys we've met.
Oh,
you know,
man.
They don't release. In terms of the television stuff and the film stuff, they don't tell you who's coming on for any of this stuff, for any of the...
No, you know...
They're slow to announce.
Oh, man, I was kicking myself, and I understand, you know, Loeb follows the rules. But, yeah, I had finished my Loeb interview and just released it, and within a day of releasing it, it's like, oh, yeah, by the way, so-and-so's the showrunner on Jessica Jones.
What?
And David Greenwald is the...
yeah.
The showrunner for Daredevil.
Right.
So, yeah, I know.
It's amazing. All right. Who have we tried to get for Marvel stuff? It's interesting because it's great for comics. You know, in an international world where you can write anywhere, where you can send in art from anywhere.
Right.
And sometimes the artists and the writers don't even speak the same language.
Absolutely.
It's not everybody's in Los Angeles.
Of
so
course.
Unlike what you're doing, we actually have people come into
sure.
studio or we try to record them in person.
Mm-hmm.
So it leads to a lot of things that we just we don't grab a lot of people, and also we just personally can't connect them because they're not here. I really want Jim DeMathis. That's who I want.
And Geffen, he's awesome.
I mean, I can't wait. Those guys I really want to talk to.
I understand. They're great guys. Very good guys.
I want Marv Wolfman would be great to talk to. We were talking about that.
Yes,
Walt
indeed.
Simonson I would love to talk to.
Walt is like – Walt and Dave Gibbons are in competition for the nicest guys in comics.
Really?
Yeah.
Not
yeah.
what you would think at all.
And it's – well, Walter,
at
yeah.
all.
You know, I mean, well, you know, Walt's got the tradition, but yeah, I mean, Dave is – yeah, Dave's another just
I know we've been trying to – I know we've been trying – I know Brubaker they talked to. I know Matt Fraction. Which yep. I'm a huge fan of.
Matt's a great
Fraction.
Guy, and Bruce's a great guy, absolutely.
I mean, huge fan of that
yeah,
stuff.
Bruce in L.A. right now, I know,
yes.
Working hard on television
yes.
stuff. So
he's
yeah.
Buddies with Ben and Ben,
yep.
so yeah,
yep.
I know they talk quite a bit to him.
Cool.
I'm trying to think who else.
Got to get Brian down there, Bendis, when he's in L.A.
I know.
Good man.
Did you hear I do a Brian
yeah,
Bendis
no,
impersonation?
No, I heard about it, so now I've got to see it now. Go ahead.
This is my Brian Bendis. I'm the B&B. I'm the bomb, baby. Brian Michael Bendis.
I've never heard him say that.
No, me either. It's just funny. It's literally. I've never heard him say that.
I always tell him he sounds like a relaxed Jerry Lewis because he'll laugh and be like ha 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 ha.
I've never heard the man talk in my entire life.
Oh,
for some reason,
Bendis,
he
absolutely.
Talks like that. He's like, I'm Brian Michael Bendis. I'm B&B. I'm the bomb, baby.
I'm the bomb.
B&B. Brian Michael Bendis. I'm the bomb. I don't know why he talks like that, but that's how he talks in my head.
That's so funny.
That's Brian Michael Bendis.
That's hilarious.
Now, when I meet the guy...
He's going to punch you.
He's going to punch me in the face.
He's going to have to, like, stand on a chair to
Well,
do
you know, John, bald on bald crime is the worst crime.
No,
is the worst crime ever.
We'll make a love connection. That's good. No.
Now,
he's a good
that
man.
Said... He's one of the most talented comic book writers of the generation. I'm a huge Powers fan.
Yes.
On. Like,
oh, I'm with
and,
him.
And he's the guy that you don't want to like. Like,
why?
He does so much that you're like, it
jealous.
Can't all be good. Really, dude, you're the bomb. I get it. You're Brian Michael Bendis, you're the bomb. It can't all be good. And everyone you read, yeah. you're like, damn it, it's all good.
Well, everyone you
It's all good for years.
Yeah.
It has to be like 10, 15 years now.
Well, and he'll admit that, you know, he was writing comics before we all discovered him in 1999, but that's the thing. I mean,
pisses
no.
me off.
Him, Rucka, Brubaker, Fraction. I was so lucky to start doing Word Balloon at the time that I did.
Yes.
Because they all were, you know, just breaking. Well, Brian and Rucka and Brew had already, like, established himself. Matt was
yeah.
just breaking. But, yeah, and at least podcasts were still a novelty.
Right.
But I got in at the right time where, luckily, they do come back. They do like coming on.
That's
they
great,
do,
man.
You know,
it's of course.
So that's a nice, you know.
I have to go back and listen to one of the Bendis interviews
oh,
now so that I can hear what he actually talks like.
Yeah, man. No,
but
he's great.
You know what else? It's just funny to me that someone would do an impersonation of a comic creator as well, like a comic book writer. Like anyone would know what that would sound like. Like, come on. Really?
That's true.
What the heck?
Oh, man. Now, you've been a good man, and I'm looking at the time. We're, like,
uh-oh.
Close to an hour. Do you want
to... I'm going to have to go have dinner with my family.
I was gonna say,
they're
so,
waiting on me.
No, honestly, Heath, it's a pleasure. I really, as I said, and I truly mean it, I really like the Nerdist writers when they do the comics panels.
Thank you so much, John.
I hope you guys will do it live every now and then.
I hope we will, too. You know, I know they did one at... Los Angeles, and I was out of town for Kamikaze.
Oh, was it? Oh, okay, they did it for Kamikaze.
We did it for
okay.
Kamikaze,
cool.
And I think we are talking about doing it at... San Diego this year.
Awesome.
Which would be super fun.
Yeah.
But I would love to do some more live ones
cool,
if any, you know, dozens of people are clamoring for it.
You know, well, and I know, and I heard
tens
yeah,
of people
yeah,
want
yeah.
it.
Well, that's the thing. And, you know, I told Ben that because I heard you guys say that too. And yeah, Ben's like, yeah, not a lot of people showed up for the podcast.
Yeah.
I'm like, yeah, but Ben, 10,000 people downloaded just my episode, let alone the other guy's shows. I'm like, they listen. I swear to God. Don't
oh,
worry.
Oh, yeah. Dozens of people.
Many, yeah, I don't know how many dozens show up for Meltdown when they do their normal stuff. I don't know, but it's, you
yeah.
know.
Yeah. No, it's, you know what? We do it because we love it and it's super fun. And I'm excited that there's been such a great response to it.
That's
so
awesome.
So thank you for saying that. I just am super excited to talk to these guys. And I think that comes through, as are you.
Absolutely. Absolutely. No,
well, this has
up.
Been a blast, man.
It's my pleasure.
And I can't wait to keep talking with you.
Hey, we'll do it again. I'm happy to. And yeah, in a few months and everything, come back and we'll talk more.
I would love it.
And, you know, it's been a pleasure. Thank you for coming in studio, sir.
Thank you.
There you go. Two fun animation interviews to close out 2013 on Word Balloon. I hope you liked it. Today's show was brought to you by Drawboxes,
at the Collection Drawer Company at collectiondrawer.com. Check them out, by all means. It's a great way to improve your collection with the sturdiest and safest boxes that are out there. Drawer boxes from the Collection Drawer Company. And from InStock Trades and InStockTrades.com, they are closing out the year with very special sales. You want to take advantage of 45% off DC, Marvel, Image, and Dark Horse, 38% off IDW, Valiant, Fantagraphics, Humanoid, and Boom Studios. All that ends on December 31st. So get in and take advantage of some of those deals. You can get things like the Paros Bureau Trade Paperback Volume 1, Undercover, 50% off. It's just $10. It's Bendis and Oeming at their best. Grab it. You can also get Marvel Masterworks, The Atlas Era Strange Tales, Volume 6, 50% off. It's just $37.50. You can get The Art of Tara McPherson, Limited Box Set. It's 50% off and just $125. How about The Authority Hardcover Volume 2? 45% off, $19.24. You can get Deadpool Trade Paperback Volume 3, The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, 45% off, just $8.79. Fables Volume 19, Snow White, that is 50% off, it's just $8.50. You can get Showcase Presents Strange Adventures Volume 2, 45% off, it's just $10.99. Or the Vampirella Hardcover Archive Volume 8. Is 30% off, just $34.99. Where? At InStockTrades.com. Check it out. Great way to spend your holiday money, and great, great books at a price you can afford. InStockTrades.com. All right, here we are. It's the end of 2013. Hey, thank you very much. 2013 has been a great year for Word Balloon. Progress keeps happening, and I'm so thrilled. And part of it is your support. So thank you very much for listening. Thank you, League of Word Balloon listeners, for doing even more. And really, I promise you 2014 is going to be as exciting, if not even better, because great ideas and great things are in the works for 2014. More great conversation on your way. I hope you enjoy it. Until then, have a safe and happy new year, and I wish you all the best. We'll talk to you next week. Until then, Word Balloon, for the last time this year, is a copyright feature of Shaky Productions, copyright 2013.